The Christmas hymn, Silent Night, which we will sing in a short while, has been a cherished part of our shared culture. In 2011, it was even granted UNESCO cultural heritage status. You may know, you may not know, that this much-loved hymn, written in Salzburg by Franz Gruber, is celebrating its 200th birthday this year. The lyrics were penned by someone named Joseph Muir, a modest curate, and was originally played on the guitar at the last minute because the organ was broken. Sounds familiar. But the power of this carol, this song, was never so clear as on Christmas Eve, 1914, when fighting on the battlefields of World War I stopped and a lone soldier's exquisite voice made history. In a 2014 report, a Canadian journalist spins the tale. He writes, "Soldiers wrote home to their families, to their wives, to their parents, saying, 'You won't believe it. It was impromptu. Nobody planned it,' explained Stanley Weintraub, the author of Silent Night, The Story of the World War I Christmas Truce." It has to begin with something, and it did begin with elements of shared culture. If it hadn't been for shared culture, certainly there would have been no Christmas truce. It started with a German officer named Walter Kirchhoff, a tenor with the Berlin Opera, who happened to be there on the battlefield. He came forward and he sang Silent Night, Stille Nacht, in German, and then in English. In the clear, cold night of Christmas Eve, his voice carried very far. He was an opera singer. The shooting had stopped, and in that silence, he sang, and the British knew the song, and they sang back in English. And gradually, the troops crawled out of their foxholes towards a no man's land in the middle. The song had a deep impact on many of the soldiers. Soldiers wrote home the day after to their families, to their wives, to their parents, saying, "It was like a waking dream." They recognized that at both ends of the rifle, they were actually the same. And sadly, it was only a truce, not peace. Hostilities returned in some places later that very day, and in others, not until after New Year's Day. I remember the silence, the eerie sound of silence, one veteran from the 5th Battalion, the Black Watch, later recalled. It was a short peace in a terrible war. As that great war resumed, it wreaked such destruction and devastation that soldiers became hardened to its brutality. While there were occasional moments of peace throughout the rest of World War I, they never again reached the scale of that moment, that Christmas truce and the singing of Silent Night in 1914. And even though that truce was a one-off in history, the fact that it remains so widely commemorated speaks to the fact that at its heart, it symbolizes a human desire for peace, no matter how fleeting, through the shared singing of one beloved hymn, Silent Night. It will be sung all over the world tonight in as many languages as it has been written. If you are like me, you may be reflecting with dismay and sadness about how these men could have trustingly entered a no man's land, sharing music and fellowship, and then revert to the pursuit of killing one another. In some ways, it defies logic, not to mention decency, mercy, and a fundamental regard for life itself. They sang Silent Night in order to bridge their cultural differences with goodwill, and yet they slept in earthly, if not heavenly, peace for that night and that night only. What of this night? What is the state of the world as we prepare to sing it ourselves this evening by candlelight? Who is able to sleep? Who is able to sleep in peace, and who is not? It's a rhetorical question, but is it calm and bright for the innocent children of Syria or Yemen or those detained at our own border? Evangelicals have taken to Twitter and FoxNews.com in droves to decry the what they call the radicalization or politicalization of Christmas and whine that they just want to be able to coo over the baby Jesus in a tender and mild sort of way. My response to that is, if Jesus was incarnated and born to the purpose that Christians believe he was, then he came to make us more aware of our need to be peacemakers, not to distract us from violence and hatred in the world with Muzak, Cyber Monday, or Miracle on 31st Street. You may want to believe or already believe that Silent Night was written by some random Austrian guy in 1818 who looked up from his strudel and said, I'll just write a song about a calm and bright Bethlehem night and how tender and mild the world was then for Jesus and how tender and mild the world is now for us. Then we can all go and sleep in heavenly peace. But this is far from the truth, not only the origins of this hymn, but the conditions of the world at the time of Jesus' birth and the whole circumstance of his birth, as we've just sung in several of the songs we've sung tonight. I find it ironic but not surprising that as Austria celebrates this proud milestone more than any other country, they have imposed some of the strictest limitations on refugees throughout all of Europe. Let's remember that Jesus and his family were refugees. They were outcasts. He was born in a barn where the friendly beasts offered him greater hospitality and compassion than the humans. The Holy Family absolutely embody liberation theology and the imperative of us to identify even a little bit with the oppressed. Oh dear, you may be thinking, is Rev Robin going to ruin our Christmas Eve with some downer of a message? I would say, absolutely not, unless you consider a homily about being a peacemaker a killjoy. And that's up to you. What did Jesus famously preach in his Sermon on the Mount? Blessed are the peacemakers. Jesus grew up to be anything but mild. Yes, he was kind. He had a beautiful heart. But he was a rabble-rouser, the first Reformed rabbi, a preacher and a prophet with an open and inclusive tent. The babe we sing about tonight became that man. Jesus was anything but silent, day or night. As Madeleine L'Engle tells us in her poem, First Coming, he did not wait till the world was ready. He did not wait until hearts were pure. He came to a world that did not mesh. Pastor John Pavlovic, a popular blogger who I like very much, recently wrote a column entitled, If Your Church Is Silent Now, You May Want to Leave It. Speaking of Christmas Eve specifically, he writes, if there ever was a night when spiritual leaders should stand bravely in front of their faithful and speak the hardest truths, complaint and mass exodus be damned, it should be this one. Earlier this month, Josh Searle White, who's up here in the choir, preached about the Puritans and commented on encroaching political correctness within our UU movement. I listened to the sermon off our website, and I agree with him that we need to be mindful of laying it on too thick, yet I'd also argue that there is a lot of ground between indifferent silence and cringe-inducing wokeness. We can consider hard truths together and retire to the parish house after the service to joyously consume our nog and cookies. It's not either or. I was pondering all of this on Thursday evening as I attended a Christmas concert of beautiful Appalachian songs at the Friends Meeting House in Pittsburgh. And as fate would have it, I sat right near a poster on the wall that explained the Quaker Peace Testimony, the Society's central tenet. It reads, "Friends have always worked to reconcile conflict and relieve the human suffering of war. While this good work must continue, friends should also be working on measures to forestall future hostilities." Whenever I pass the Friends Meeting House there on Ellsworth Avenue in Shadyside, I notice their yard sign that proclaims, "War is not the answer." When will humans learn that war will never bring peace, just victors and losers and casualties and broken societies? And all of those refugees running from war and violence. A pamphlet I picked up that evening is called, "Are You a Peacemaker? Lucky Coincidence." And it offers us some guideposts to follow the star of nonviolence and community building. It reads, "Peacemakers speak the truth in love. Peacemakers forgive and offer grace to others. Peacekeepers don't hold grudges or deep-seated resentments. Peacemakers initiate reconciliation. Peacemakers don't wait for someone else or something else to do it. Peacemakers don't retaliate or seek revenge. Peacemakers remain calm. They take action against injustice and oppression. Sometimes, in order to be a peacemaker, a person has to appear to be a troublemaker. Jesus surely modeled this when he cleared the temple. Peacemakers take a stand against non-peace and help to restore wholeness." It reads, "Some people define sin as shalom breaking. Anywhere or anytime wholeness or completeness is broken, it breaks peace. And it's possible to be a really nice peacekeeper and do harm by allowing brokenness to remain." Goes on to tell us that becoming a peacemaker requires courage, intentionality, and perseverance. And if you decide to become a peacemaker, you will have to fight for it in your own life. As Lao Tzu famously taught, if there is to be peace in the world, there must be peace in the home. For there to be peace in the home, there must be peace in the heart. Will you wish upon a Christmas star with me that this time next year, we will have brought forth our resources to the task of peacemaking so that those the world over whose lives are far from calm and bright, who speak the universal language of shalom, may speak at last, if not in heavenly, but earthly peace. What truce might you call tonight? In your heart, in your small, in your community, in the world? What small act of peacemaking can you begin on this wintry eve? For we cannot wait till the world is sane to raise our song with joyful voice, for to share our grief, to touch our pain, he came with love. Rejoice, rejoice. Salam, Shanti, Shalom, Shlama, and amen.